everybody. There was a little internet disconnection point, and so if you got to hear me rambling on, looking for Jen, now this is part two. It's a two-parter kind of thing.
this is our new thing where we bring you two parts and we constantly look for each other. So yes. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you. So I thought it was on your end, and then I was continuing to talk to myself thinking, oh, well, you know, maybe it was just a blip and she'll come back. And I said, okay, well, I guess I'll start talking about room 10, whatever. And then it just, and then I realized, oh, it's my internet that, died. So anyway, I want to wrap up on the Delphi, and then we will do, Roland T. Owen. So where are you? You're just looking, you're thinking about the serial killer thing.
I'm putting it together, actually. That's what I've been doing. I've moved on past where ISP is in life, and I'm just going to try to work these two cases together. I'd already worked out a lot on Lyric and Elizabeth's case, and I was going to either do it with you or do it in some capacity, and it would need to be like a two-parter. But I have a lot of stuff that people, they haven't posted anywhere yet. It's not appearing on social media platforms. I have looked into that case. Delphi, I think, needs to be paired. I do at this point. I'll just call it. If I'm wrong, then hey, I looked at something and I was wrong. But to me, it's too much coincidence. So I think they should look at that. Even if the word serial killer is scary.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you, because I haven't looked at it at all. So Lyric and what's the other girl's name? I'm sorry.
Elizabeth.
Okay. Were they together in
they
the
were.
Same
they
kind
were.
Of situation? Okay. So
yeah,
this is like
cousins.
Abby and Libby.
Yeah, they were riding bikes, and the last place they were seen was near the Fisherman's Pleasure, which is a little creek, little recreation area, and that's where they were abducted from. And they know that because of the scattering of the belongings. It shows, you know, where the girls were kind of drug off.
So a little bit different kind of scenario. Now, did they go there a lot?
Yes, they rode their bikes a lot all around that little community, so someone would have known where to find them.
Now, how far away is this from where Libby and Abby were killed?
It says it is roughly 100 kilometers.
Okay, so about 60.
And so you've got Delphi and then Evansville. So it's not that far when you think about a killing ground.
No, I mean, that's about 60 miles. So now, is there any... I'm sure that the police are looking, though. Is there any...
Immediately, upon impact of Abby and Libby, they immediately called it. They immediately said, we know what you're going to say. Yes, we believe it is overly beyond a coincidence that this has occurred. You had the Lyric's parents calling it in, and they said, look, we've got this. We know. They are still looking at it, but I don't think they want to call it. I don't think they want to tell the public because the public will panic. Either this guy's dead or he's got to be incarcerated because where is he? You know, suddenly this starts like, you know, making me think less about the joiners.
Yeah, because I
have more tea.
Oh, good. Please.
Incoming. Okay, so you had the first joiner that everyone was aggravating, and this is why I tell you, don't attack, okay? He filed a lawsuit, and the prosecutor looked at it, defense looked at it, and they said, there's so much slander and libel here, he will win, period. What do you want to do? So the person paid him out. He got paid. So now you have an incoming second lawsuit from a person that's not even been named a person of interest. They're dragging him online. He is filing, literally, and they're telling him, you have a very good case. You will likely win. He is asking for $500,000 or for the blog and all removal of his name from social media. These are going to be on like sites that are owned by private people.
Yeah, because, I mean, here is the law. Generally, it's a little bit different with Reddit, but I will give you the law and just use my site as an example.
I love that. Give it to us.
Okay. If I post something, and it could just be I could post red paint is better than white paint or something like that. Okay. So then in the comments, people could say, so-and-so is a killer. So-and-so, you know, raped my wife. So-and-so did this. Okay. It can be the most slanderous, defamatory stuff you've ever seen. I as the site owner am protected, and I'm not liable for comments that people put in the thing. On Reddit, it's a little bit different because Reddit doesn't actually post anything, right?
Correct.
It's, you know, they allow for the posting of things. But it is comments on, you know, it's a tough one. I think that they would be immune from any kind of lawsuit. So then if you are an individual who is suing somebody because of stuff they put on Reddit, you know, you're going to have to get Reddit to give up the identity of the people. And I think that's going to be kind of tough.
Oh yeah. If it comes to like a big, you know, going after a big corp like that, yeah, that would be tough. This is more, I believe, bloggers.
You know, okay.
Websites that are owned by people, and they're writing the complete narratives themselves. They're not going off of just comments. You know, they're not perfect like you. They're just, they're over there writing and just, they don't know law and stuff. They're just basically saying, this guy did it. I know he did it. They need to go pick him up right now. And yeah, I mean, it looks pretty bad. His full name and address is up there.
Yeah. Now, see, yeah. Here's the thing. So on this, on whatever site, if they had just said, who do you think the killer is in a post?
There you go.
And then in the comments, people said, I think it's this guy, and give his address. The site owner's not liable. So, you know, that's what they should have done.
Yeah. Normally, look, slander liable. It's a unicorn in court to win. But this guy, you know, he waited long enough for whoever to hang themselves, and then he went in on them. But the curious thing is that this is what is going to make me roll out these two joiners, because, you know, when you sue somebody, what can they do to you? They get to ask you questions.
Yeah.
So they're going to ask him a lot of questions, and he's like, I'm not worried.
So do you think that one of the people, you know, well, I know that you've always had, let me ask you this. I know you've always had your own personal suspect in your mind.
Yes.
Does that change, though, when you think about it being a serial killing?
If it is not the one guy that I'm looking at, because we've just been down through so many, you know, ruling out people. If this guy is not a part of it because he's just the best possible candidate, then they have to switch gears and they have to consider the horrible fact that it could be a serial killer. There's too much evidence now on the other side about looking at a serial killer possibility. Indiana, for some reason, is a hotbed of extremely nasty, mutilating murders, okay? When you look at their crime history, it's there. So they need to just switch gears and look at something else.
Okay, so with the limited number of pool of, because, you know, you had the state police saying, oh, you know, it's somebody from here or local to here.
Yes, I vetted that too. Okay. I think that's where we lost the connection.
Yeah. So then if you have this situation where they say he's local, okay, and then you told me with the other two that they were found in a park that only locals know about.
Yes.
So that person would have to be local to that area too, or at least very familiar with it.
Or familiar with Indiana and have a hobby that is specifically linked to visiting state parks for a purpose. This brings in the serial killer theory.
Okay.
They need to look at it.
Right. So if this person knows about it would seem to me that there's very few people that share a commonality with a town, with two towns 60 miles apart.
Correct. With bridges and water and woods, and I think that the lyric killer messed up because they picked it somewhere almost too isolated. That is a giveaway to me. It is so far off the beaten path, and legit nobody goes there unless they grew up there or there's just a reason to.
Which is why it took so long to find the bodies?
Yes, they didn't think to, you know, really look there.
So do we think that they were dumped, were they killed there or were they dumped there?
I think he killed them there. I do, because I think he carried them off and he has a fascination with that place, with the water. It's the ambience of the location. And this is why it's good to go visit the locations to get a good perspective and you can figure things out, because it's the ambience of everything. It's the water running. It's seeing the bridge. It's the woods. There's something about these locations. If it is a serial killer, it's the grounds that is bringing him in. He likes all of this.
Now, is anybody working on some kind of project or something that is putting it together where it is a serial killer? I mean, are there people that are going out there to visit?
Oh, yes. Definitely. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do people go out there and they film things and, like, they're doing their own little individual kind of their versions of a documentary?
I don't think they went that far, no. I don't think anyone has went the extra mile into documentaries or anything like that, no.
Okay.
They put the work in, though. This is worth it.
Yeah. Any other tea about Delphi?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. I am going to summarize the room in 1046 one, because I think some people said it was a little bit confusing, and it is a little bit confusing because of the fact that nobody knows exactly what this guy was doing. But I'm going to recap. So we go back to 1935, January 2nd to be exact, and this guy, going by the name of, but not his real name, Roland T. Owen, was shown to room 1046 in the President Hotel in Kansas City. Now, he had asked for a room that faced the inner courtyard rather than the street. Now, here's what I found out, because remember last week I was, okay, how does he draw the drapes if he's in an interior room? So then I did a little bit more digging. And it turns out that, and this is why I don't like when there's like seven sites and people take shortcuts or whatever. There was a courtyard. So in the interior of the building. So he had a room that was facing the courtyard, but it had windows. So that's why the shades were drawn.
Perfect. Okay.
Right. It was bugging the crap out of me, and I couldn't figure
out
why.
Look, you can go deep in a lot of these cases. You know, if we wanted to do, if we had longer than just like the 50 minutes or whatever, we could really go deep.
I know. And I have to tell you, and even if we have to do this again next week with this same damn case,
because there's more.
There's a lot more, and I don't know if we'll get into it. But, and I almost want to have another episode of it too, because of the fact that it's, to me, unlike the Delphi and the other two girls, I find this to be easily solvable.
I'm telling you, we need to get in the car. This is solvable. This is genealogy. I followed it all the way down, and I know where people misstepped.
There's just so many things. We know the name. I mean, there's a
multiple
lot of
names.
There's names. There's locations. There couldn't be that, you know. It wasn't the biggest town in the whole world in 1935.
Right. People knew him. Like, people, they remember him now.
The street. I mean, so to me, this is easily solvable, or at least to give you a really good idea of who did it. And, you know, and we'll talk about, you know, the flowers that were sent. There's just so many names that it just seems really, really easy to do. And I'm kind of shocked that with all the websites and all of the hundreds, if not thousands, of pages devoted to this case, that nobody's taken the time just to do a little bit of work.
You have to adopt a case and stick with it if you're going to follow through. I know that a lot of people, you know, we're storytellers, so we're just doing story after story. But if you fall in love with one, follow through. Because I saw some people went to the cemetery, and then I saw their missteps. They missed the grave.
Yeah,
there's sites that will give you coordinates.
And it's like the lady with the barrels. I mean, she took that on, and she, you know, made that her own.
Yes.
And she is the reason that, you know, it was solved. You know, or at least the identities of the people in the barrels. So you need to do that. And, you know, I'm fascinated by this case, but I don't have the time to solve it. But I'm shocked that they're out of all the, it seems like it's an extremely popular unsolved case. But to me, it seems very solvable. So I'm surprised that nobody said, oh, you know, I can solve this one if I put a little bit of work into it. Unlike the Delphi ones, which people are going to be speculating about for the next 5 years.
Well, they don't put work into those either. So you have to go on foot. Okay, look, when people ask me, where do you read? What's the best place? Reddit and all that. I laugh. Look, this is how it is. I use the phone. I use people. And then there's feet work. Okay, those are my sources. So I don't really like the Reddit. I think the Reddit people get kind of crazy with their theories. So if you want to solve this, and I totally think we should, if we have time, go to the cemetery. Find out the genealogy, where he's buried, and look around for, and I have a whole list of names, of the tree of which, you know, the people you should look for.
Yeah, because And to me, the police, they must have known who Don was. Okay, because well, let's just go in order because I don't want to confuse people more.
Yeah, we're losing them.
Okay. All right. So anyway, Owen, Roland T. Owen, he checks into this hotel. Now, he doesn't have any luggage except for a hairbrush, a comb, and toothpaste. And it's all carried in his black overcoat. So people knew about this kind of stuff. And we've already talked about the maid who was fascinated by Mr. Owen.
But yeah, she was very fascinated. And listen, when he checked in, he was rambling. And that is something that's going to be important because he was rambling about how expensive the hotel across the way was. And it was the Malbach Hotel. And so, you know, as the story goes on, they learn that he checks into that hotel using a different alias.
Yeah. And it just...
Oh, and he asked for an interior room. And that's how they went around and asked all the different hotels, who has been staying here throughout the month that has been asking for interior rooms? And this list starts lining up. Different hotels, different names, same man. They all knew it was the same guy because he had the scar and the cauliflower ear. And he always used a different name. And he ends up checking in with another male.
Yes. And, I mean, he gave an address in Los Angeles. And then the bellboy, and everybody knows the name of the bellboy even. And the bellboy, this is what I'm saying. It's like it seems easily solvable because there were so many names. And now the fact is it was in 1935. So you kind of, you know, we're having to solve it from beyond when it seems to me that the police could have solved it pretty darn easily back then just because they had all these names. But anyway, so the reason we know what kind of luggage he had is because the bellboy remembers because the bellboy walks into his room and at that time, you know, you're kind of sticking around hoping for a little tip or whatever. And Owen right away.
That's the problem. The bellboy's right. Where's your luggage? I'm not going to get a tip.
I know. And Owen right there in the room takes the things from his pockets. The things I said, the comb, the toothbrush, the toothpaste, and a brush. And he just puts them on the counter of the bathroom and he gets the key from the bellboy and then right away he leaves to go on an errand. I actually found a picture of the room in the hotel.
Ooh.
So
tell me about that room.
I found a picture of the hallway. I found a picture of the hallway.
Oh, the hallway.
Leading up to the room.
Is it long?
It is.
Okay.
You know, and if you've seen the building is in plenty of photographs. And it's just, you know, it's an old brownstone kind of like pre-war building monstrosity kind of thing.
It's got that old Parent Trap feel.
Yes.
Like the hotel from the Parent Trap.
Yes. And then when you look at the hallway though, it looks like a hallway from The Shining.
Ah, okay. Now I have a picture in my head.
So, you know, so he goes out on an errand. And then later in the day, we have the maid. Okay, so this maid's name is Mary Soptic. And she entered the room in order to clean it. And I don't understand this very much. Because, you know, he leaves. He presumably checked into the room when it was clean. And so Mary... Unless it's maybe a turn down service or something like that. I don't understand exactly. Did they clean in 1935?
Are you asking why she came back?
No, I'm asking maybe in 1935 they cleaned hotel rooms three times a day.
Well, she came back because there had been a female guest staying there and she had a rapport going with her. She actually liked her and she was going to tell her a story. And she moseyed into the room without knocking. The door was ajar. And in was, you know, the new guy, Roland. And she said, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't know that the room had changed over.
That's right. So that's right. That's I forgot about the woman. Yes, exactly. I forgot about that.
And he was like, it's okay. It's fine.
Because she thought that the woman had stayed over, which is why she was going in to clean it. I got it.
Yes.
But that means somebody else had already cleaned it, though.
Yeah, she does get nosier from there. No lie.
Yeah, so she does. And anyway, so she sees him sitting there. And this is kind of the common theme of Mr. Owen's stay. Is that he's always in the dark, rarely makes conversation, although he did one time with the maid, and he just has a little lamp going. Now, I have a theory about that, is I think that, it seems sinister and all this kind of stuff, but he was a boxer. And I wonder if he had migraines or like after effects from concussions.
I love When You're in My Brain. You know how we covered that wrestler, the girl, you know, who died possibly from her wrestling injuries? I wonder if he didn't have some brain damage or something that caused him to have maybe light sensitivity.
Yeah.
So we're on the same page there. I think you're right. I think that explains the dimming of the lamp situation.
Yeah, and he just, I think that concussion or always migraines, or maybe the migraines, he never knew when they were going to come on, but he could, try and slow them down. And I think that's the reason. He didn't really want much light. And so anyway, so Mary comes in to clean, and I used finger quotes there. And he says, so she comes in, like you said, she's expecting somebody else to be there, so it's a little bit awkward. She does her kind of cleaning, and she's leaving, and he says, hey, make sure you leave the door open because I'm expecting a friend. And he mentioned it several times, and he leaves to leave her there to snoop around. And she's not going to be able to snoop around very much because he only has a comb, a brush, a toothpaste, and toothbrush.
Correct.
So then she cleans and does her thing, and then she comes back later that same day and to leave towels again, and sees him lying on his bed and just looking at the ceiling. And I get that. And being the nosy person that she is, and this is the other thing. This must have been a boon to the police department to have somebody this nosy who remembers things like, oh, I saw a note, and the note said, Don, I'll be back in 15 minutes. Wait.
Yeah, it goes to show that she was going in everybody's room, likely, and just going through all their stuff.
And after she snoops and reads the note to Don, then she decides, oh, I was intruding, so I decided to let myself out.
Well, you do that.
Yeah, because he was just staring at the ceiling. I, again.
You know what that tells me is that, she really was paying attention to his comings and goings. If she knew when he was in there and when he wasn't, that's freaky.
Yeah, and I think also, as we, learn more about him and what he was doing in between in these errands and what was happening outside the hotel, and why he keeps changing hotels is another interesting thing. And I don't know if we'll ever learn why he kept changing hotels because, he paid cash up front. So
he changed the hotels. He paid cash. Sometimes he was accompanied by a male and sometimes he wasn't. But the rapid changing makes you think about that he was paranoid of being followed or of someone following him and finding him. And that kind of brings in the woman we'll go on to talk about, the commercial woman.
So all of that we just talked about with 1046 happened the day that he checked in. Okay. All of that was just the day that he checked in, and we had Mary the maid, going in there at least three times after he checked in. And that does. So there must have been something that, she found, hey, I want to keep on top of this kind of thing. But all of that happened the first day. So then the next morning, of course, Mary, they're bright and early. And this one is interesting. And again, we kind of talked about it a little bit last week. I'm not exactly sure how this works. But she says that she found the door locked from the outside.
Yes.
And so she had to use her passkey. So I'm confused.
I had to look it up. Okay, so back in the day, they had these really weird hotel locks, and you had a master key if you were a maid or staff member with the hotel, maybe maintenance, for emergencies, and you could let yourself in from both sides. You could do that. But if you were just the guest, you got a one-sided card, and you would lock the door from the inside and then shut it, and then use your master key to get back in. So that's just the door setup.
Okay. So, but she
could
tell
that. She said it was locked from the outside, right?
Yeah.
So that had to be a staff member that locked it from the outside, because I just read that the hotels in the area back then, you could not do that. You didn't have a way to do that. Locking it from the outside is like a staff or maintenance thing.
Okay. You know, so that's just kind of, you know, that part is just strange, because then it's almost like, okay, so is the staff or did somebody, but when you left the room, you were able to lock it, right? To leave, you know, because your stuff.
Yes, you would lock it. You would reach your arm around and lock it, you know, from the inside. You know, reach your arm around to the back of your doorknob, lock it.
Okay.
And then slam it. And then you'd let yourself back in with your key.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. All right. Oh, so interesting. So anyway, so Mary comes in and she finds the door locked from the outside. So then she uses her passkey and she finds Owen sitting there in the dark again. And just the one lamp again. But he was talking on the phone. And, you know, he waves her in, and her words, he seemed uncomfortable and shifty.
Really?
Okay.
She's got him being very mysterious, very dark, and always shifty.
So then we have our second appearance of Dawn. And she says that Owen said, "No, Dawn, I don't want to eat. I'm not hungry. I just had breakfast. No, I'm not hungry." And so then she quietly cleaned and, again, took some dirty towels.
She quietly cleaned while eavesdropping.
Yes, exactly.
Do you think that's a code conversation? I don't really think Don was asking him if he was hungry. Do you?
No.
Because he goes on to go out to bars. We've talked about this with women, and he gets in trouble. And there's no male, you know, in those narratives. So that sounds like a code.
It is. It sounds like a code, but about what, I don't know. And it would be also, because if he did have breakfast, he would have gone out to breakfast, and then we would have more, where did he go to breakfast? You know, I'm assuming that, you know, being 1935, there's probably a place to eat in the hotel, you know, and then you'd have somebody say, yeah, he came down here, this, and we don't have any kind of reports that he actually, you know, we have reports of when he left the hotel, but we don't have any reports, at least about breakfast. So I think you're right. It could very well be a code. But this is the second time we've had Dawn, because there was the note that she said was addressed to Dawn.
Correct.
And now we have him talking on the phone saying Dawn.
Yeah, he's definitely in check with this Dawn person a lot. This person has tabs on him and needs to know where he is, I guess, at all times.
So in the afternoon, when she's making her extra rounds just to make sure she can check in on Owen.
More towels.
Right. So she says that she heard two men talking inside. And then, of course, you know, curiosity got the best of her. And she knocked on and asked through the door if they needed fresh towels.
She does, and the guy answers her, and it's not the rolling guy this time. It's the other man, and he's like, "No, we do not need towels." She says very, very deep, mean voice,
and that she that she should go away.
Yes.
Okay. Now wait. I want to, because I don't want to forget about it. Tell me in the timeline. Oh yeah. Okay. So I need to go back just So that's that night. After before we get to the late night stuff, this is the night that, so January 3rd, we're still on the night after he checked in. And this is the night that the city worker, driving home gets flagged down by, what turns out to be Owen.
Who's practically naked, I read. I dug a little bit deeper.
Oh, did you? Okay, good. Yeah. Because all I know is that he wasn't wearing his coat, that he was just wearing his undershirt. And remember, we're talking January 3rd in Missouri. And, you know, it's got to be cold.
Cold. Yeah. So he's normally wearing that coat of his. And I guess when he went into the bar, he had it on. But when he comes out of the bar, did he go somewhere? He was seen with two women. Did he go off with the two women, or did he get into the confrontation at that bar? Because he comes out, and as the story goes on, he has got tattered clothes, and the guy describes him as practically naked and with a wound on his arm. And that's why he stopped for the guy, because the guy looked like he was in a lot of distress.
Yeah. And like I said last week, is that my guess is that he did go somewhere with the two women. And probably to what he thought he was going to have sex with the women. And something happened because, like you said, he was practically naked. So at mm-hmm. some point he got undressed, at least to take off the coat and a shirt, not his undershirt, right?
Yes.
And, but with the scratch. Now, the guy said it was a deep scratch, as in maybe he was doing something to one of the women that they didn't want, and so they scratched him, and he's holding it. But it's,
considering he's fleeing in panic, it sounds like they got into it. Either he did something wrong or she did something wrong. There's two women, so it could have been threesome. They could have all got into it, but it possibly maybe he was stabbed because the wound was, it was a deep wound.
One of the, and yeah, they, and he said that the city worker who stopped, he thought that the guy might have more serious injuries.
Yes. And this one is like, the, a, you know, he's a wrestler, you know, he's big, he's bulky, and he's basically back there moaning in pain. So
right,
it must have been bad.
Exactly. And so the city worker says, you look as if you've been in it bad, which is an interesting sentence to say the least.
It is.
And then the newspaper, this, we get into this. I think that the newspaper left out the biggest clue in the history of the case is he said, this is what Owen said, I'll kill that blank tomorrow. And the newspaper was too delicate to print the expletive. So
it should have. That word is important because it goes to show
it could
know,
be a
how
male
much
or
anger.
Female. Right?
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
So we don't know. We don't. What if he, you know?
Did he say Bia or did he say a Bass?
Yeah, exactly.
That's so it. That's all we're asking.
Exactly. And I'm thinking because of the fact, well, that he was in a state of undress and that he was seen with women, that he probably used the derogatory term towards a woman. However, you know, are we sure that he's straight? We don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. I'm not sure about that.
But it does seem like he had a lot of interactions with women. And maybe these women, the two of them, maybe they tried to rob him.
Yeah, perhaps he got in with the wrong type of business women, yes. Ladies of the evening, and yes. They went to rob him and he tried to get out of the situation. Or perhaps they were interrupted by another male.
Yeah. But obviously he didn't get robbed or he still had cash because the city worker dropped him off at a taxi stand and he saw Owen get in and into a cab.
Yeah, so Owen, he must have had money to pay for the cab.
Right. So but what we have here is we had Maria coming in at around, hold on, she said late afternoon round. Let's go with 4 o'clock because that's what she did the day before. So and 4 o'clock is when she hears him with another guy, and then the guy says, no, we don't need towels. So sometime between 4 o'clock and then 11, when Robert Lane, he's the city worker. So we have this 7-hour gap where it appears that Owen went to a bar, he met some women, he went over to presumably their place or another hotel. They tried to rob him or he did something untoward and he got injured and it was picked up on the street. So, I mean, he's had an eventful 7 hours.
He has. he's a colorful person.
It is. So before we get to the actual death, I think that I don't know how long we've been talking because now it's in two parts. Because the death and the aftermath, I think, it's not going to be a full episode, but you know, we could talk about it then, but I know that.
Yeah, because we still have to talk about the woman that came in and she's
yeah,
in the guest room.
With the last name Owen. And, you know, so we need to talk about that and what she heard and all this other kind of stuff. And it's fascinating. And because of the fact that we love talking Delphi so much, I mean, I think we're well over an hour right now. So
this is what happens when we get together and he claims that he doesn't like true crime. And then we get to talk about
it. I didn't say
I
don't like true crime. I like true crime. But the thing is that I don't actually – but I am fascinated about the 1046 case just because of the fact that I think it's solvable. The Delphi one, I'm intrigued by it because it just seems like the entire Reddit universe is fascinated about the case and all have their own theories because the police won't actually give you any information.
Yeah, which, you can wildly speculate because they don't help you figure things out. But yeah. Good on the people on Reddit who are – they're at least trying.
Yeah. So I don't know. Well, maybe you'll find some more tea between now and then.
Absolutely, I will. I've got more. I held back.
All right. So I promise everybody that Jen and I, we will finish Room 1046 next week. And then I'm going to crowdsource this, and I'm going to try and find out this guy and if he fought any professional. In fact, you know what I'm going to do? I will make a commitment that between now and next week when we record that I'm going to try and find this guy. I'm going to look up professional fight and wrestling records from St. Louis and Los Angeles and everything on the train stops between Los Angeles and St. Louis and Kansas City and see if I can find this guy.
I will help you. I have two. So I know that you'll help me find more, and together, watch us. We're going to do stuff.
Exactly.
We're going to do it.
Exactly. All right, Jen. So Jen can be found on patreon.com/deadanddocumented, on Twitter at Mascara and Mace, and you can find out all her contact stuff on there. Listen to her podcast. She does it much more professionally and much more in depth about a lot of other crimes and doesn't get easily distracted like I do by the bright, shiny lights. So thank you once again, Jen. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate you.
Thank you. I appreciate you. And just don't forget, you're still the king.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.